Chapter 15:16, Aftermath of Victory. After Marie had converted Luzon, the process became surprisingly smooth. Luzon stood beside Zin like a looming shadow, calling up the remaining members of the Lupus Pack one by one. Zin placed her hand on each of them, drawing them into the Howlers with quiet focus. It felt strange to her. The process didn't seem to take any of her energy, and none of the wolves showed any resistance. Part of her suspected it had nothing to do with her skill as a Luna and everything to do with the unsettling figure standing next to her. Luzon watched them with that same thin, eerie smile. She could imagine the silent threat in his stare, that if any of them showed even a hint of reluctance, he would crush their will with pain until they broke. Even the iron-masked werewolf had been turned while still being passed out, hopefully, since Ilva was able to control him. Now Zin could do the same. Only one among them hesitated. Slit had been hovering at the edges, weaving through the chaos, unsure if he even wanted to reveal himself. The thought of becoming an Omega Wolf gnawed at him. The idea of being loyal to Lupus, if Lupus even returned, felt hollow. What pack would Lupus even have left? Most of his army had been killed. The few token wolves left behind in Ruined City were scattered, leaderless. The majority of what had once been Lupus's force was gone. And what remained had now joined the Howlers. So Slit stepped forward at last and bowed his head. Zin touched him, and he too crossed over. Once the last of the Lupus wolves had been converted, the tension in the air seemed to dissolve. The hostility between the two groups faded as if it had never been there. The newly joined wolves looked different, calmer, steadier, no longer bristling or growling. "I've called one of the hotels the Howlers own," Marie said as she brushed dust off her arms. "We can have the Lupus group stay there for now. Once things settle, we can figure out their place from there." Before they could even start discussing the future, the cleanup began. Transport was arranged for the bodies of the Lupus dead, gathering them into one area to be claimed. They had to work quickly, before the public began pressing for access to the park again. The entire battlefield had already been marked as a no-go zone by the authorities, and the Howlers who had survived were allowed to return home to rest. Meanwhile, the critically injured were rushed to treatment. Adam was still alive, but barely. The news of Don's death and Kanu's had begun to spread quietly among the Howlers, leaving an empty hollowness in their chest. There was no time to grieve. The White Rose members had agreed to stay in Slough for a while before heading back. They still needed to renegotiate the terms of the deal Kai had made with them, and that could not be done while the leadership of both packs was reeling from blood loss and exhaustion. Eventually, once the field had been cleared and the first layer of chaos smoothed over, the surviving core members of the Howlers gathered again. Luzon and Slit came too, both of them strangely subdued. They met inside the restaurant, what was left of it. The place had been partially clean, though glass still crunched underfoot and the air carried the sour smell of burned wood and blood. Tables had been dragged together in the center so they could all sit and talk. "It feels strange," Luzon admitted as he looked across the table at Midwack, "to be part of the same pack as you again." "Likewise," Midwack replied, his expression grim. "I don't think either of us could have predicted any of this. But for the sake of everyone who's left standing, we need to move past it and figure out what the hell we do next." The others nodded in weary agreement. Even though their bodies ached, even though every one of them wanted to collapse into a bed for a week, there was still too much that needed to be discussed. "I have a suggestion," Luzon said suddenly, before anyone else could speak. That in itself was surprising. Most of them had assumed they, the victors, would lead this conversation. "There's a major concern that's going to be hanging over all of us," Luzon continued, "and it's the vampires." Innu blinked, then slammed his fist into his open palm. "Oh, right, I completely forgot about them, but they agreed not to attack us, didn't they?" "They agreed not to attack us," Marie said, "because they wanted our groups to kill each other first. That was one of Kai's biggest concerns, remember. Just in case the vampires moved, or if the Dark Guild attacked, the Howlers had always known there was still that massive force of werewolves hidden away in another city. But after what Gary had unleashed here, they weren't even sure those reinforcements could stand up to anything now." "On our side," Luzon said, "we'll try to contact our allies in the Dark Guild to see if they've spotted any movement. I don't know what type of contact Lupus had made with them beforehand, but they are quite good at gathering information with us. I wonder if they will even answer me. But no matter what, there's one thing we must do above everything else: keep the fact that Gary, Lupus, and the other Alpha who appeared today are all missing a secret. They must not find out, not at any cost. He let his words hang, heavy and final, before finishing. So I think we need to spread it to the entire world. The Howlers have won this fight, and there's a reason for that. Chapter 15-17. Where are they? Huh? Innu burst out laughing from the other side of the table, his voice sharp with disbelief. Are you trying to make a joke or something? What do you mean spread the word that we won the war? That's what actually happened. You're making it sound like we were the ones that lost. The sound echoed through the broken restaurant, where cracked glass still crunched under boots and the smell of smoke lingered faintly in the air. The surviving corps members of the Howlers had gathered at the long table, and though exhaustion weighed on every one of them, the tension in the room kept them awake. Across from Innu, Luzon's expression didn't shift. That thin smile stayed fixed to his face as his cold eyes moved from Innu to Zin and then to Marie. I'm wondering, Luzon said smoothly, do you frequently do sparring among each other in your pack or your group? If you do, I would be happy to go against him again any time. It was a joy to fight him. The words were calm, almost too calm, but the weight behind them made Innu's mouth go dry. He remembered their fight vividly, the sheer power behind Luzon's attacks, the way every clash had rattled his bones and forced him to fight with everything he had. The only reason he had managed to win was because he had used the environment, forcing Luzon into tight spaces where he couldn't move freely. To face him head-on again, no. That wasn't something Innu wanted to experience ever again. Can you explain exactly what you mean by spreading the word? Marie asked, her tone cautious. Luzon turned his gaze on her, folding his hands together. What I'm saying is this. The vampires are masters at gathering information. They have networks buried in every city, and they can learn what happens anywhere if given the time. He leaned forward slightly, his voice dropping low. This fight, it was between the two of our packs. That means it would have been difficult for the vampires to get close or observe much, and that is why we need to get ahead of them. Spread the word that the Howlers won and make it sound like it was with ease. They will eventually learn you've won, but if we make it appear as though you emerged stronger than ever, they will hesitate to act. Fear will slow them down. Marie and Zin exchanged a glance. It made sense. If the vampires were going to attack, the perfect time would have been right after the clash of the Alphas. They weren't even hiding the fact that they had left Gary to face Lupus alone. That was the entire point of the battle. If the vampires learned that all three Alphas were gone now, it's not just the vampires we have to worry about. Apollo cut in, his deep voice firm. Don't we still have to worry about Unzoku? He's been causing us problems nonstop. If he sees this as a failure, he could come back. Wait, Olivia said, her brows knitting. What if Unzoku was the one who caused the three of them to go missing in the first place? If he has the power to restrict Gary, and the power to turn Kai into an Alpha, then maybe he was the one who made them disappear. The room went quiet at her words. It was an angle that none of them wanted to admit, but one that made far too much sense to ignore. Wait, Luzon said suddenly, his sharp eyes narrowing. Someone turned one of your members into an Alpha. It wasn't something that happened naturally, Midweck gave a short nod, his tone grim. Has your side not dealt with him? He's a man who calls himself the first werewolf. Luzon went silent, his face unreadable as he processed that. For a moment it looked like the very name stirred something buried deep within his mind. But then slowly he shook his head. I can't say I've heard of him before. I'm not even sure if there's any record of him from the bookkeeper either. What? Park blurted, eyes wide. It wasn't just him. Every Howler around the table stared in disbelief. Unzoku was beyond powerful, something greater than an Alpha. He was ancient, older than any of them, maybe older than the entire werewolf race as they knew it. How could Lupus's side, who had centuries of history and bloodlines steeped in tradition, not even know his name? Are you sure you've never seen him? Midweck pressed, his voice low and heavy. We have a few guesses. When performing the ritual, we believe Unzoku is the one the werewolves unknowingly vow themselves to. Lupus made that vow too, so there's no doubt they had some form of contact. Midweck's eyes darkened. Before the fight with you, Lupus came to us not once but twice, first for Gary. When that failed, he came for Kai, the shapeshifter Alpha you saw, to force the werewolves to clash against each other. That was his plan, so if anyone would have spoken to Lupus, it would have been Unzoku. That was when Luzon's expression flickered. Something clicked in his mind. Wait, he murmured. You might be right. He lifted his gaze, his calm tone gone for the first time. There was an attack on the castle. A large part of it was destroyed. Some said it was just Lupus training, but it didn't seem that way. It didn't seem that way at all. And more importantly, it was after that attack that Lupus changed. Suddenly, without warning, he declared he was going to march on the Howlers. It was such a sudden change of heart. A heavy silence fell. Many of them wanted to dismiss it, to say Luzon was just searching for a scapegoat, but no, he wouldn't lie now, not here. Right now, Luzon stood in front of the people he now considered his Lunas. He was bound to them by pack instinct, by something even deeper than loyalty. If he said it, he truly believed it. "This is a big problem," Austin muttered finally, running a hand through his hair. "We can keep things quiet for a while, but without Kai, Lupus, or Gary. When the vampires learn they're gone, or if Unzoku wasn't the one who took them, then we'll be in big trouble." "Our next step has to be to find out what happened to them," Marie said, her voice soft. "Do you have any ideas?" she asked, turning to Luzon. He only shook his head. Everyone sat in still silence, their minds racing. Then all at once, their heightened senses caught it, the faint sound of soft footsteps crunching across broken glass. A shadow moved through the doorway of the ruined restaurant. "I think," a calm, gravelly voice said, "I might be able to help with that." Garlark, the bookkeeper, stepped into the room. Chapter 15-18. The bookkeeper's job. The reason everyone immediately noticed Garlark entering the room was simple. He wasn't one of them. Even now, he still belonged to the Lupus pack. The sight of a wolf from the rival side calmly stepping into the ruined restaurant made several of the Howlers tense up, chairs scraping the ground as they half rose to their feet, ready to shift if they needed to. They hadn't seen him once during the battle. And to appear now when the war had just ended and their alpha was missing set every nerve on edge. "It's okay." Luzon lifted a hand slowly, his calm voice carrying enough weight to make them hesitate. "He's the werewolf's bookkeeper," he explained. "He does not fight. He does not take sides, even when two alphas clash against one another. His duty is to teach the alphas the ways of our kind, to preserve our history. He is not here to harm anyone." The tension in the air eased slightly. Even though many of the Howlers were still agitated, Garlark had an aura about him, something strangely calming, almost like the presence of a Luna wolf. It seeped through the air and softened the atmosphere, and one by one they sat back down. "I was wondering where you went," Slit muttered from further down the table. It was the first time he had spoken. His voice was rough, uneasy, like it scraped out of him. Even though he now stood under the Howler's banner, it still felt unnatural for him to speak openly. "You were right by my side during the battle. I thought you would have gone back to Ruined City." Garlark inclined his head slightly. "I am fully aware that my turning up here now of all times may come as a surprise," he said evenly. "I have been doing what all of you are doing, assessing the situation. And while doing so, I also conducted some investigations of my own." His eyes swept slowly across the table. "I think it's best that I first explain, as Luzon did, what my position is and the role I play." Garlark's tone was quiet but carried, and the room fell silent as he began. He told them how long he had been part of the pack, how he had served since the days of Lupus's rise and even before that during Dean's era. He had guided them both, taught them everything about what it meant to be a werewolf, not just fighting or power, but traditions, the history, the sacred laws of the pack. The bookkeeper always remained. He lived beyond alphas, passing from one generation to the next, and just as he had once been taught, he too had taken on an apprentice. That apprentice remained secret. No one knew their name until the time came for them to inherit the role. When that day arrived, the bookkeeper would bring forth the book that held the legacy, and the apprentice would be marked as the next in line. "The bookkeeper carries not just the book," Garlark explained, tapping his temple. "We carry the memories of our predecessors here in our minds. That is why I am called what I am. I record the events of the present and preserve the events of the past." There was something in the way he spoke, a stillness like deep water. It wasn't boastful. It was simply fact. "Before I suggest anything or tell you what I have learned," Garlark continued, "I think it is best that you move me over to the Howler's side." Several of them frowned. "Do it," he said. "That way, you can be certain the words I speak will be the truth." Zin stood slowly. She hesitated for just a moment, then stepped toward him. Placing her hand gently on the top of his head, she closed her eyes and called on the Luna's power that now surged within her. Energy stirred, swirling between them like invisible threads. Then it sank into Garlark, and just like that, he was part of the Howlers. When Zin lowered her hand and returned to her seat, something strange happened. A faint shimmer rippled over her skin. The glow that clung to her Luna form began to fade. She blinked, confused, and then gasped as her body shrank back to normal, fur vanishing, claws withdrawing. Her uniform, stretched and torn from the transformation, now hung loosely on her frame. "Wait," she said breathlessly. "We changed back." Marie stared down at her own hands in shock. She was changing too. The silver gleam of her eyes dimmed, and her Luna aura broke apart like mist. In seconds, she was simply Marie again, tattered Howler's uniform and all. I thought we were going to be stuck in that form forever. "There is a limit," Garlark said calmly. His words drew their eyes back to him. "To how long the true forms can last. Just like everything else, when the energy dwindles, you will revert. The passing of energy flows between the two of you, as it did when you first unlocked the form." He folded his arms, eyes thoughtful. "It is believed that the true Alpha is meant to go on an endless rampage, feeding off everything it defeats, replenishing its energy with every life it claims. In that way, it can remain in its form almost indefinitely. As long as it is fighting, but if the fighting stops, if there are no more lives to consume, it will fade." The room was silent. "In this case," Garlark continued, "we can assume the same thing has happened to the others. Wherever they are, their true Alpha forms must have broken." For some reason, the way he said it didn't sound like mere guessing. It sounded like something he knew, built on knowledge far older than anything they had. "I want to suggest a few things," Garlark went on. "First, that some of our werewolves return to Ruined City. We need to know what is happening there and if Lupus or any others appear." Zin and Marie exchanged a glance. That made sense. "Second," he said, "that all of our spoils of war, the armor, the weapons we used in this battle, be handed over to you." Zin blinked, startled. You'd really give us all that?" Garlark nodded. "You are the victors," he said simply. "It is only right that the strongest among us carry the strongest gear. Now that we are all part of one pack, it should all be used to strengthen that pack." Zin let out a soft breath. She hadn't expected them to give up so much without a fight. She wasn't sure if it was just because they were part of the same pack now, or if they truly respected her and Marie as Lunas. Either way, it was good news. It would be a massive boost to the Howler's strength. "Now that we have that settled," Garlark said at last, lowering himself into a seat, "let me tell you about the medallion that was around Gary Dem's neck." Chapter 1519. The End of the Dark Guild. The night sky stretched endlessly above, a silent canopy of black scattered with cold, distant stars. Down below, through a narrow, shadow-drenched alleyway, a lone figure staggered forward. Marcus's breaths came in ragged, tearing gasps. Sweat slicked his face, dripping from his chin as he stumbled, each footfall uneven and heavy. He veered toward a wall, one trembling hand slapping against the cracked tiles to steady himself. He glanced over his shoulder, then tilted his gaze upward, searching the rooftops. His fingertips sparked faintly small flickers of blue lightning jumping between them before sputtering out. "I can't see them anywhere," he muttered, voice breaking with exhaustion, "but I don't think they've given up." His legs gave way. Marcus let himself slide down the cold wall until he was sitting on the dirty concrete floor. He didn't care what grime or filth clung to him anymore. His whole body throbbed with pain. His muscles felt torn, his arms were shredded with cuts, and his bones ached like they might crumble if he tried to move again. "That man, he was so strong," Marcus thought bitterly. "I never stood a chance. Running was the only choice, using all of my energy to bring the building down behind me. It had to be done. But even after that, I doubt he's dead." A darker thought gnawed at the back of his mind, one that chilled him more than the night air. Did they let me go? Did they want me to escape just to follow me later? He had tried to reach the other members of the Dark Guild, sending out urgent signals across their channels, but nothing. No response from anyone. It had to be a coordinated strike, he told himself. It wasn't just me. They must have hit every base, every cell at once. But why? Why target us now? Was it because we were helping the Lupus Pack? Or was it something else? Did they want our items? His fists clenched and he winced at the pain that flared up his forearms. The Dark Guild wasn't supposed to be vulnerable like this. They had bases spread across multiple cities. Their members were feared, many of them trained in the use of chi, and most carried powerful artifacts at all times. There was a reason they were called one of the kings. Even if another king attacked them, taking down the Dark Guild was supposed to be nearly impossible. And yet here he was, alone, broken, running for his life. "No," Marcus growled inwardly. "If I stay here, I die. The only thing I can do now is make it to another base. Maybe there are other survivors still out there. Gritting his teeth, Marcus forced his body upright. His legs screamed in protest, but he pushed on, dragging one foot ahead of the other. He had barely taken a few steps before something flickered in the darkness ahead. Two glowing red dots. His heart stopped. Eyes. The same eyes that had been stalking him for hours. "You guys really don't leave me alone, do you?" he rasped. "Always waiting. Only coming out after I've barely managed to recover." He raised his hand. Sparks crackled between his finger and thumb but fizzled away before they could form into anything solid. Too drained, too empty. His powers were failing him. The red eyes darted forward, and from the shadows a figure lunged, a pale blur with clawed hands outstretched. Marcus braced for death. A flash of light split the alley like a thunderbolt. A beam lanced from the side, striking the vampire mid-leap. Its body disintegrated in a burst of white fire, collapsing into drifting ash. Its severed hand thudded to the ground with a hiss, crumbling into dust moments later. "I told you we should have left earlier," a calm voice said from the side. "If we'd been any later, he'd be gone." Marcus's eyes darted toward the voice. Moments ago, there had been nothing there. Now, two figures stood at the mouth of the alley, side by side, as though they had simply appeared from the shadows themselves. One of them, a tall man with a greatsword slung casually across his shoulder, let the weapon rest against his back as he stepped closer. The other gave off a strange presence that prickled Marcus's senses. Something about him felt oddly familiar, though Marcus was certain he had never seen the man before in his life. Before Marcus could speak, the unfamiliar man lifted a small canister and sprayed something toward him. A fine mist enveloped Marcus, soaking into his torn clothes and stinging the cuts along his skin. "You have a rather large wound on you," the man said matter-of-factly. "You reek of blood. No wonder they've been able to track you." Marcus blinked, confused, as the mist quickly dried. The man continued, "You should have figured it out by now. That vampire wasn't trying to kill you. They were tracking you, using you, keeping you alive so you'd lead them to any other survivors still out there." Marcus's breath caught. His mind flashed through the long chase, the way the vampires had stalked him but never gone for the kill, always staying just out of reach. They hadn't been trying to finish him off. They'd been hurting him. Right now, Marcus didn't trust anyone. He never had, not fully, and after what had just happened tonight, that paranoia was carved even deeper into him. But these two. They had saved his life, and they spoke about the creatures as if they truly understood them. He hesitated, then forced out the words. "Who? Are you? Why are you here?" The man with the strange presence looked him over, eyes calm and sharp. "Marcus," he said, "leader of the Dark Guild." Marcus stiffened. The man tilted his head, a faint smile flickering. "You've got fascinating powers. They're becoming more common among your kind, I've noticed." He gestured to the swordsman beside him. "This here is my assistant, Dean." Then his gaze locked onto Marcus once more, and the air seemed to shift around him as he spoke the last words. "And as for myself, I am Rickle, one of the founders of NIRV.